Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Christina Clack and I will be your presider today. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age or ability or inabilities. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. They are either presented by a Prairie member, a member of our community, or by our minister, Sandra Ingham. Today, our own Johanna Hatch will be presenting Pope Francis after 1 year in office, and I'll look forward to announcing Johanna in a few minutes. We do have a few announcements this morning. So just a reminder, tonight, our Pete Singer sing-along here at Prairie, 5:30 potluck, 6:30 the sing-along starts, led by Dan Proud, so that'll be a lot of fun. I would like to read a few opening words. These opening words were said by Pope Francis. I prefer a church which is bruised, hurting, and dirty because it has been out on the streets, rather than a church which is unhealthy from being confined and from clinging to its own security. More than by a fear of going astray, my hope is that we will be moved by the fear of remaining shut up within structures which give us a false sense of security, within rules which make us harsh judges, within habits which make us feel safe, while at our door people are starving, and Jesus does not tire of saying to us, give them something to eat. It's time to light our chalice. I'm pleased to invite Reuben and Madeline. Come on up.
Vain discussions in the present day about the virgin birth and other old dogmas need the light of the chalice to expose them as belonging in the past. Let the light of this chalice reveal the need for a religion which builds up character, teaches brotherly love, and opens up the seeker to such a world of usefulness and the beauty of holiness.
So Johanna Hatch joined the Prairie community in the summer of 2013 with her family. A lifelong Catholic, Johanna attended the College of St. Benedict in St. Joseph, Minnesota, and volunteered with the Sisters of St. Joseph of
Carondelet.
Carondelet. Carondelet in St. Paul, Minnesota. Her writings on feminism and Catholicism have appeared in the anthologies From the Pews in the Back, Young Women and Catholicism, and Hungering and Thirsting for Justice. Johanna has served on the board of directors of Women's Ordination Conference since 2010 and has served as co-president since 2012. So that's a lot. Plus, you're a busy mom. So I'm thrilled that you're going to come and talk about St. Francis after 1 year in office.
Not yet.
All right.
Thank you.
Sure. Christine.
Well, first of all, I just wanted to say that I was so grateful, if not a bit daunted, to be invited to share some of my thoughts on the first year of Pope Francis's papacy. As you can see by the slides that I got up here, Francis's image in the secular media has really been that of a pope of the people, even as a radical reformer. And I think to a certain extent, a little bit of a cute pet in a white cassock who kisses babies. And so when Penny asked me to share some of these thoughts, I warned her that this is decidedly not my take on Pope Francis. I'm a little more like the image to the left there. Some things change, some things stay the same. So as someone who really has been actively involved in the movement to reform the Catholic Church for most of my adult life, I would describe myself as somewhat of a contrarian on the topic of Pope Francis, so just as a bit of a forewarning. And for folks that may not be familiar with how I kind of ended up here at Prairie and my background with the Catholic Church, Christina shared a little bit of that in my introduction, but the vast majority of my life I've been engaged with the Catholic Church in one way or another. I was baptized at St. Joan of Arc Church in Orleans, Massachusetts, which I think is a bit prophetic of all the saints. I received all of my sacraments in the Catholic Church growing up, going to Mass on Sundays. I was also an altar server. I was a cantor, so I sang at Mass. So my family was very, very involved in the life of the church. When it came time for college, I picked the College of St. Benedict, which is a Catholic women's college in St. Joseph, Minnesota, and it is sponsored by the Sisters of the Order of St. Benedict. And that was really my first introduction to women religious in the Catholic Church. And from them, I received what I think was a very solid education in both theology and feminism, with a good dose of the importance of one's individual conscience. And following graduation, I then spent a year with the Sisters of St. Joseph of Carondelet in St. Paul. They're a very progressive order of nuns, and I spent a year volunteering with them and doing service in the community. And it was these women that really gave me my formal introduction to the church reform movement. Prior to that, I didn't really know that there was a whole movement within the Catholic Church that was really trying to challenge some of the more restrictive teachings, especially around the role of women, the place of the LGBTQ community, and teachings about sexuality and reproduction. So they brought me to my first Call to Action conference in Milwaukee, which is basically the annual national gathering of reform activists and organizations. And they also sent me to my first women's ordination conference event, which pretty much led me on a path to more and more radical feminism while trying to reconcile that with still kind of identifying as Catholic. And following that, I spent a year studying at the Washington Theological Union, which sadly no longer exists anymore, in Washington, D.C. They closed about a year after I left. I hope it wasn't my fault. focusing on Christian spirituality studies. And then after that, my spouse and I moved to Madison, and here we are. So from my perspective, I think there are really two competing narratives about Pope Francis. That of the rock star on the cover of Rolling Stone, the New World Pope shaking things up in the Vatican, and that of what I think is really just a new friendly face of protecting orthodoxy on issues of gender, sex, and reproduction. Furthermore, I think the world's obsession with Pope Francis calls to mind two things for me. One, I think there is a great misunderstanding about the role of the Pope in the Catholic Church. And two, at the same time, I think it really illustrates this great longing for healing and for reconciliation and for the example of someone who authentically embraces the really radical message of Jesus of Nazareth. And I think it's natural to want that hero, but as charming as Pope Francis is, I do not think he is that hero. Paul Bauman, who is the editor of the Catholic magazine Commonweal, wrote in an article for Slate that the obsession with Francis, quote, encourages the illusion that what ails the church can be cured by one man, especially by a new man. In truth, no pope possesses that kind of power, thank God. The rock star status of Francis and declarations of his, quote, radical statements about things that I think should simply be a baseline for Christianity really removes the responsibility of the people in the pews from critically engaging the institution to which they claim their loyalty. It also minimizes the struggles of many of those reformers that I just started to mention, who work tirelessly against the continued marginalization of women and the LGBTQ community. So next slide, please. You got it here. So there you go. There was much, much ado about his statement. Yeah. If someone is gay and seeks the Lord, who am I to judge? But in that same exact interview, he also said, on the ordination of women, the church has spoken and said no. John Paul II, in a definitive statement, a definitive formulation, said that door is closed. And we should also keep in mind that even such a bold statement as, who am I to judge, does absolutely nothing to change the teachings of the Catholic Church, which is that any sexual orientation beyond heterosexuality is considered, and I quote, this is from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, intrinsically disordered. And following that, I will also never forget how it felt to be told by someone who calls herself an atheist and a feminist, when I critiqued the Pope on this very point, that I needed to be patient. That these things take time. And eventually, she was sure of it, this good Jesuit Pope was going to allow women to be ordained, allow families to make their own decisions about their reproductive choices, and would finally treat LGBTQ folks with true dignity. Keep in mind also that I had already been president of Women's Ordination Conference for about a year at this point, which is the oldest and largest organization in the world dedicated to women's equality in the Roman Catholic Church. So to be kind of in that place of, you know, challenging this popular notion about the Pope, and then being told by people who were not as familiar with the church that I really just needed to calm down because we can't do this all at once. And it's like, I know, I've been doing this for a little while. That being said too, we're a year out from the election of Pope Francis, and we're still waiting. We're still waiting for any sort of substantial change. The next slide, please. So I really like this image because I think it does bring up a good point. It really cannot be denied that Francis has brought a radically different posture to the papacy than either of the previous popes of my lifetime, both John Paul II and Benedict XVI. His first acts as pope were simple, yet authentic, I believe, rejecting much of the wealth and majesty that his predecessors embraced, in favor of a more simple way. In his first Holy Week as Pope, leading up to Easter, I truly watched in wonder as he, on Holy Thursday there's a traditional ceremony where the priest or leader of the community washes the feet of usually members of their community in their churches who serve the community. And Pope Francis went to a prison for juveniles and washed the feet of a Muslim girl, which I really was shocking to me, especially when you consider that in churches around the world, including right here in the Diocese of Madison, women are barred from that ceremony. So, yeah, Pope Francis washes the feet of a Muslim girl. Bishop Morlino will not allow women who serve as religious educators and administrators and pastoral associates to participate in that ceremony right here in Madison. His rejection of much of the finery embraced by his predecessors, especially Benedict, shows what I believe to be really an authentic and refreshing attempt to more closely embrace the roots of Christianity. His style has been lauded as pastoral over political, which for the most part I would agree with. But even while I embrace the words of a pope who, as illustrated by our opening words, places a very high priority on what Catholics call the corporal works of mercy, to feed the hungry, to shelter the homeless, to visit the imprisoned, over the orthodoxy of the faithful on what many call the pelvic zone issues. At the same time, he has heartily and forcefully closed the discussion on those very issues over and over again. For instance, even though 98% of Catholics in the U.S. have used a method of birth control that has not been approved by the church, and the church's immovable stance against the use of condoms, even to prevent the spread of HIV, has contributed to unknown amounts of suffering, Francis has gone so far as to call the decision by Pope Paul VI to ban all forms of, unnatural birth control as courageous. So the real struggle in speaking adequately about Pope Francis, his role in the church and the world, is that while I would describe myself as critical to the point of cynicism, perhaps the eagerness to embrace him illustrates perfectly the hunger and hurt felt by many liberal, former, or otherwise exiled Catholics. But when I'm honest with myself, it's really not hard for me to understand why. And this is where I will take a more personally reflective turn in my talk today. So I would like to play one of my favorite party games, if you'll indulge me. It's called Two Truths and a Lie. So there are three quotes that have been attributed to Pope Francis. Two of them are real, one of them is not. So I'm just curious if we can guess. So the people of God wants pastors, not clergy, acting like bureaucrats or government officials. Sounds pretty good. Our church is big enough for heterosexuals and homosexuals, for the pro-life and the pro-choice, for conservatives and liberals, even communists are welcome and have joined us. We all love and worship the same God. I can get behind that. We must restore hope to the young people, help the old, be open to the future, spread love. Be poor among the poor. We need to include the excluded and preach peace. So how many of you think the first one is a lie? Pretty good. How many of you think the second one is a lie? Oh yeah, you know what's up. How about the third one? So indeed, it is. It's the second quote, which I'm going to talk about a little bit. Let me find where I... Sorry. Okay. So you did. You picked out the fake. Very good. And so it has been with great frustration as I've watched self-identified feminists and progressives gush over Pope Francis's words and actions. In a particularly frustrating turn, an internet hoax in December of 2013 declared that Pope Francis had declared hell a heresy. He declared all religions as true, and that full equality for women in the church had finally been achieved. And this is something that has circulated through my Facebook feed over and over and over again, particularly from progressive religious folks, folks that used to have identified themselves as former Catholics who left the church for various reasons, and other social justice advocates. What was surprising to me is that no one seemed to notice that it only appeared on one blog and wasn't covered by any major news sources. And that's where that second quote comes from as well. And then I end up feeling really terrible when I have to break the news to them that, no, the church hasn't radically changed, that Pope Francis really is maintaining the status quo. In fact, he stands strong against these kinds of reforms. This eagerness to embrace a pope whose introduction to the world was that little shy wave, and a name of a saint who we have all noted for his rejection of worldly glory, I think really illustrates a deep ache that many of us carry. Is it perhaps because so many of us actually want the Roman Catholic Church to want us back? For me, dissociating with the church is very similar, I think, to leaving a family of origin or being a refugee in a new land. Yes, I will claim it, the Catholic Church is an abusive and dysfunctional institution. Yes, it has purposefully excluded women and LGBT people and has had the audacity to call it the will of God. But it is the language that I am fluent in, and it is a culture that still influences how I am and how I view the world. And as I have become an increasingly visible critic of the Catholic Church, I have been exhorted many times to repent and, quote, come home. But what those who ask this of me don't seem to realize is that in order to come home, I must reject my most basic beliefs about my dignity and worth as a person. In fact, until I reject the notion that women and LGBTQ people are worthy of full equality, home does not want me back. And if I'm being honest, that does hurt. As I said earlier, Pope Francis probably can't fix that. No one person can instantly heal the brokenness of that institution. Nor do I expect him to. But to gloss over the fact that Francis continues to stand strong against women's ordination, reproductive justice, and the full equality of LGBTQ people in his church and in society at large, and hold that as sacred teachings, minimizes the very real harm that continues to be done. Can we go to the next slide, please? We're going to take a little different turn. If we believe that the church's problems can be solved by one charismatic man, we are not acknowledging the depths of the problems. One figurehead is not enough to truly reform an institution of 1 billion people. At the same time, expecting him to do so, and that if we get a, quote, good pope, the work will be done, completely denies the real power of Catholics around the world. Even as those outside the Catholic Church, if we place these high expectations on Pope Francis, we deny the conscience and humanity of each person who must choose to remain complacent or to challenge the status quo. Every day, there are Catholics actively rejecting the belief that women are less than men, or that to be gay is to be deeply disordered. Students at Eastside Catholic in Seattle walked out in protest after their beloved vice principal, Mr. Z, was fired for marrying his male partner. Father Roy Bourgeois, who has been one of the greatest influence in both my social justice work and now in my feminism in many ways, was a Mary Knoll priest for 40 years and is very well known as the founder of the movement to close the School of the Americas, which is a military training school for Latin American soldiers at Fort Benning, Georgia, was stripped of his priestly ministry and excommunicated for refusing to repent of the belief that God equally calls women and men. Think about who the church does not excommunicate. Around the country, Catholic lay people have been at the forefront of movements for marriage equality, even while their bishops seek to silence them. And that last picture is Sister Janine Gramick, and I love her sign. Sister says, vote no on six, which was, or vote yes on six, excuse me, which was a ballot initiative in the state of Maryland for marriage equality. So even while their bishops seek to silence them, they continue to step out in this movement all over the country. While none of them have been on the cover of Rolling Stone, they are my rock stars. You can call them prophetic or delusional, but they do not accept that division or oppression are the will of the divine. They do not need permission from any pope to do what they know is right. This, in my opinion, is the only real way that change can take place in the Catholic Church, and I would encourage those of us outside it, especially those of us who have actively chosen a different path, to stand with these allies. If there is a key to changing that institution, it will not come from the top down, but from the people in the pews whose consciences have been formed by the radical notion that Jesus of Nazareth was serious when he asked us to love our neighbor. My hope, however slim, is that in Pope Francis's next year, he will truly, as the Benedictines say, listen with the ear of his heart to the people in his flock. If that occurs, then we truly would see radical change. And even if that doesn't happen, as I suspect it won't, I hope that even more, that as people of goodwill, we will continue to extend the hand of friendship and solidarity to all those anonymous saints who give of themselves every day to create a more just church and world. Thank you.
I suspect we have some comments, some questions, some discussion. I see the hands popping up. So we do have some nice time to have some dialogue. Good. So Dan has the mic.
Yeah, and I think it's one thing that's really difficult with Catholicism, you know, it does. It's top down. It's hierarchical. It's pretty much, you know, a kingdom. With Pope as king, and we are the serfs, and you know, yeah. So the idea, and even the idea that the Pope can magically change everything, unless there are steps taken like that to really change who is in power at every level. And at the same time, there's this really great quote from Frances Kissling, who is the founder of Catholics for Free now Catholics for Choice. She once said that. What she liked about that work was that the Roman Catholic Church was the only government she could overthrow without going to jail. so at the same time, yeah, I do. It's hard for people who want to change the structures of the Catholic Church, but it is. I also think it's not going to change unless there's pressure on both ends. We can't, and that's why I say we can't abdicate that responsibility. Say, oh, the Pope will fix it, because if there's no pressure on them to fix it, then what incentive do they have? And I can really only speak from my perspective as to why I'd say I started in high school really questioning, especially the teachings about LGBTQ people and the role of women in the church, and why it took me, you know, 15 years to finally say, no, I gotta go somewhere else, which is kind of how we ended up at Prairie partially. But I'm still, as you can see, very attached to a lot of these movements, and I am slowly kind of like giving them away, especially with a new baby coming. But like I said, it's my language, it's my culture, it's how I understand the divine and community, and there's it's very deep. It's very much a part, I'd say, of my culture. And it's funny too, if you ever came to our house, for an atheist and whatever the heck I am, we have a lot of Catholic kitsch in our house. We got a lot of saints, we got Virgin Marys, we got crucifixes, because it is just part of that language. And I think it's also very difficult when you are taught, as I was raised in a relatively progressive parish, that God is love and we are to serve one another. You don't want to abdicate that to the people who want to make it about exclusion. Mm-hmm. And so I think for a lot of people, the decision to leave is the decision to abdicate that. But for me personally, with Roy Bourgeois, when he was excommunicated, I finally decided I can no longer lend my loyalty or any sort of credibility to an institution that would kick out somebody for believing that I'm a person equal to him. I don't want to do it anymore. So. Yeah, well, when the Pope says things, and this is something that, and like, I could talk for a whole hour about, like, weird things about the Catholic Church. so, you know, you kind of hear, like, oh, the Catholics believe the Pope is infallible. But in fact, the Pope is only infallible when the Pope says he's infallible. So the Popes can say any number of things, like, you know, if someone is gay and loves the Lord, who am I to judge? He can say that, but he hasn't said, and I, from the chair of Peter, as Bishop of Rome, do hereby declare that I infallibly state X, Y, or Z. If he was to do that on the issue of women's ordination, which is essentially what Pope John Paul II did in the opposite direction, then it actually would change the teaching, and it would kind of come down, and people would have to figure out how to adapt to that. But yeah, until he says I infallibly state X, doesn't change anything at all. But he could, if he so felt moved. You know, I would agree with that, and there's a part, you know, I'm very cynical about Pope Francis, perhaps more than I should be, but I do think that part of the reason that he was chosen as Pope was really to counter the image of Benedict XVI, to make the church a little more PR friendly, to really clean up the mess a little bit and try to embrace the people, or try to make people feel embraced, even though we aren't actually being embraced, to come back and to maybe try to minimize a lot of the harsher things that the church has done, and not least of which is the sex abuse crisis, and really trying to just put a shiny new face on the church. And I think to a certain extent, it's worked for a lot of people who are Catholic. They feel like, oh, there's a new Pope, he's super nice. And that's enough for some people, but I would totally agree with what you've said. Especially people of my generation and younger are, you know, the millennial generation, as they call us, much more than any previous generation have a very high level of skepticism for hierarchy, for immovable institutions. They are more embracing of LGBTQ equality than any previous generation. And so I think especially among young people, there is a lot of frustration with the Catholic Church, and it's kind of going in two directions. There's a small kind of bunch that kind of jumped on the church reform movement, and there's a lot who just kind of walk away from religion in general. It's also a generation that's highly, highly skeptical of any sort of organized religion. So I think as the Catholic Church is waning, a lot of people aren't going to new institutions or movements or religious communities. But I can't say that for sure. I mean, I think a couple of really important things. The first, that the Catholic Church is a successful institution. If you look at how long it's maintained itself, if you look at the size of it, like I mentioned, it's 1 billion people globally. It is the only religion that has a seat at the United Nations General Assembly. Even though it is a non-voting state, it is a state. And it has used that position to influence a lot of movement, particularly on women's rights and on LGBT rights and on reproductive rights globally. So they do have a successful model in that sense. At the same time, like your friend who said the Pope's authority ends at our bedroom door, I think that's a really American Catholic way of looking at it. Like I mentioned, you know, there was, or French, I don't know as much about the French, you know, 98% of Catholic women admit to using a non or an artificial method of contraception. That's a pretty sound rejection of that teaching.
In the U.S.
And I don't know numbers globally, but I think for American Catholics, that's a pretty sound rejection of that teaching. They don't accept it, which I think leads to two things that I think are really interesting about Catholicism and probably kept me there longer than was healthy for me. The two ideas, one being the right of conscience. Surprisingly, the Catholic Church does teach that each individual is blessed with their conscience, which they call the Aboriginal Vicar of Christ, or I call the little Pope in your heart. But you are bound to that. Even if it goes against the teachings of the Catholic Church, you will be judged by how well you followed your conscience when it comes down to the end of your life. And the second being what's called the sense of the faithful, or sensus fidelum in Latin, which is the idea that a teaching cannot really be deemed a true teaching of the church until it is embraced by the people. And these are two things that I think the hierarchy does not talk about because it will impinge upon their power and their ability to kind of control the message. But those are I think, are some rays of light. And then going back to Aaron's question, I think that's why some people stick around for a long time, because if you really embrace that, then you can say that, you can make that very clear distinction in drawing that line of where the hierarchy has a right to step into your life. Yeah, the church was growing in Africa, even, you know, the bishops in the communities there tend to be a lot more conservative on certain issues than definitely the American church, which is a little more of a free-for-all. But it is. I think that's a real challenge to the church, but I think it's also an area that many people love about the church, that it is that global faith and that it is challenging. And we have to, like, you know, try to figure out how to all be under this together. But maybe I am too American and I'm just not patient enough with that whole idea. But yeah, I mean, I think that is a huge challenge. And to be Pope, you have to be the shepherd for all of them. And that, I mean, that's a challenge that I do not want to take on. I would not want to take on.
All right. Well, I think we could keep on talking for quite a while about this, but we do have to wrap up. So thank you so much. Our closing words today will be provided by Mary Mo.
Equality shouldn't stop at the doors of our churches, synagogues, or mosques. We refuse to tolerate discrimination against women in our secular institutions. Why then do we accept it in our religious institutions? Since religion significantly impacts the broader culture, the marginalization of women in our faith communities affects all of us. This is by Lori Winder, LDS feminist and representative of Ordained Women Movement.
Thank you for coming today. Please extend the hand of friendship to those around you. Greet your neighbor, enjoy some coffee, and talk to Johanna more about it.